Let it be a dance we do. May I have this dance with you? Through the good times and the bad times too. Let it be a dance. Let a dancing song be heard. Play the music, say the words, and fill the sky with sailing birds. And let it be a dance. Let it be.
This is Mae Brussel. It's side two of tape number 449, July the 11th, 1980. I suppose I can mention the name of the suspect on the tape and radio the law enforcement gave me, because he's charged with three murders, the blundering of his mother. He's been investigated for that, taking the checks from, as I say, from Sun Oil and the Treasury Department. His name is Mr. Zaney, Z-A-N-I, and he's in jail, Robert Joseph Zaney. And when I began to talk about Austin, Texas, and the background of him, or in the, and the main suspect they have now, they're linking the ballistics, a gun he had, to the killing of Bezzard, and his claims of, I guess, bragging about some of the things he had accomplished. And he was picked up on a minor charge and put in jail, and then they began to investigate these other matters. When they talked about Austin, Texas, I said, could he by any chance have been near the Whitman boy at the tower when he went berserk and killed all those people down on the campus? Because that was the beginning of mind control program in the United States, or the excuse for what would be the Mengele's genocide program that would continue through Dr. Delgado, Navy intelligence, creating robots and zombies, and also the electrode implants, the transponders that are to put into black prisoners and other citizens and other kinds of prisoners, and the use of satellites for prisoners and prison control and mind control, machinery for allowing the experiments to begin with Dr. Mark and Irvin and Dr. Sweet in Boston, in Massachusetts Hospital, working with Dr. Delgado, was that in the 60s, in the late 60s, there was violence and riots of blacks, and that if we could take the brains of people and find out what triggers them to violence, and somehow in this mash of cells is something that triggers you to violence, if you erase that, they would be docile and sweet. And the brains of the Whitman boy were sent, this was Elliot Richardson. I called him later the Attorney General of the lobotomies. I wrote articles about him. Elliot Richardson and John Connolly and these people got the idea to take the brains of the Whitman boy and examine them and then apply this to riots in Detroit and Newark and around the country, Watts and so forth, of the blacks. And I felt that the Whitman boy was under control. And he also had negatives and pictures I read that were taken cleaned out of his apartment. There's always these Marilyn Bakers that come into Artie Bremer's apartment, the SLA house, the Harvey Oswald's room. They find these incriminating diaries and confessions and so forth, write books about them. But I felt that there was something that linked this particular Zaney to the Whitman shooting. And the law officer in Austin told me that, yes, indeed, he knew the Whitman boy. He's mentioned him. He talked about him, that he was studying humanities, arts and humanities on the campus when Whitman was there, and has made reference to him. And all of a sudden I got a picture of a very high agent using P.O. boxes only, never home addresses, multiple aliases, security, retirement checks, business retirement checks of a deceased person who's been murdered, free from prosecution by the Internal Revenue for forging checks, free from threatening the death of the president. This is a very important person, a natural for killing a simple civil rights leader like Bezzard, but even bigger. And as we talked and went at length about his links and his special favors and his traveling and his mobility, I became more concerned that they really do have a big fish and that they should watch him closely and investigate those three murders. And, of course, if you look up the source of the checks that were coming to him, and he mentioned this to me, they came from Philadelphia. Again, I've done many tapes and broadcasts on the links of the Philadelphia connections to the Kennedy assassination, to Abscam, to Princess Grace and in Monaco, and the armed suppliers of weapons, Mr. Cummings, who went from Philadelphia to the CIA to London and supplies all the major so-called terrorists that Kissinger gives lectures about, such as Carlos and the famous counterintelligence terrorists. Cummings supplies the weapons. The news media plays up the terrorists. Kissinger gets paid to give the speeches. Then the House American Activities is formed to, quotes, get the terrorists. And the Sun Oil, of course, have offices. There's the Arabian Sun Oil, the Bahamian Sun Oil, Argentine Sun Oil, the Carib, the British, Ecuador, Iranian, Pakistan, Libya, you name it. Sun Oil is in every single one of these countries. And checks were coming to this character. And there was much involvement of Philadelphia in the assassination of John Kennedy. And what the important thing about this character is, once when he was overseas and they were threatening to arrest him on a certain charge, and he was traveling, he made a threat that he would sell to a foreign government information about the USA that would bring this country down to its feet. It was detrimental to the USA. And, of course, the biggest story detrimental to the USA is the murder, not of Mr. Bizzard in Austin, Texas, but the killing of John Kennedy nearby in Dallas, Texas. And I feel that the links of the Kennedy assassination to counterterrorism, to mind control, Jolly West, Jack Ruby's doctor, being the head of UCLA neuropsychiatric, working with these people. There is a ball of wax that I have studied that started with the John Kennedy assassination. Then it went in to the fake terrorism and the use of the Nazis and the Tsarists for that, and mind control, and mass mind control is an excuse for more control, such as down at the University of Texas in Austin, Texas. This fellow that is in jail right now, this suspect is in he's suspect of three particular murders and has not been charged with the federal crimes that he should. Therefore, I feel the prosecution on the others might be weak and he'll be out. When I knew Marion Waterhouse, she had remarried and moved out here shortly after her other husband was dead. I don't recall her ever mentioning the fact that she had a husband active in civil rights. She came out here and was in the Peace and Freedom movement, and knew people that I knew in the Peace and Freedom, Louise James and others, and I believe they were here at the time of the Presidio trial, the mutiny trial against defendants. They were complaining about one of their buddies in the stockade that had been murdered by the military police, and the people in the stockade that protested were charged with mutiny against the federal government. I think they came out here at the time, and then they went back to Texas. And the time that they came out here in 76 is when Charles Winan came out here. Charles Winan is a fellow I've mentioned on many tapes. Melvin Belli, the attorney for the Hells Angels, the Nazi gang squad, at the time of Aldemont, that concert, Mrs. Goering's attorney. The notorious Belli was the attorney for Charles Winan in a case where Paul Krasner and the Rolling Stones had published an article saying Winan was involved with Navy intelligence and military intelligence. He was a neighbor of mine who supplied drugs, been charged or allegedly supplied drugs for the Manson family and for the military counterintelligence. And then it became clear as I talked to the sheriff that Mr. Watson, Charles Watson, who did all the murders in the Sharon Tate home, and the LaBianca home that Charles Manson was blamed for but hadn't done the murders, also came out from Texas. We had a big migration of people from Texas that broke up the music scene, the hippie scene, the hitchhikers, discredited the youth, brought blood and violence and hard drugs and killings to break up the crowd that were visibly anti-war protesters. Now, if we get a war in the Middle East, I don't believe that they can effectively break up people now. Their demonstrations against the nuclear plants, and I've been in a demonstration where there are 100,000 recently down here in San Luis Obispo, and there was no violence and no drugs or poisons handed out. They couldn't do it as well as they did in those days, because most of us even are a little wiser, and even though it's a new generation, I think we've been turned to look at some of the problems that broke up these organizations and people and possibly steer clear from the pitfalls the next time. But this big fish is caught. Interesting names. Names are unusual. Robert Zaney and Mr. Pipkin and Mr. Bizzard. I thought it was out of a Dickens story or a novel, but it's so bizarre that it beats any novel that you're going to pick up anywhere today. Out of Iran and from Moscow Radio, I have a friend in Salinas who listens to shortwave Every night from Moscow, they're talking about the assassination teams that are being smuggled into Egypt. They're getting ready for the Shah to die if he isn't on cold storage already. I thought maybe Jimmy Carter's trip to Japan, he would stop over in Iran on the way back, but I guess that's out. But the Shah was supposed to be on deep freezer in coma, and they're digging the coffins, and reportedly Iranian assassins have come in, and they're going to try to wipe out the whole family and infiltrate at the time of the funeral of the Shah. The story is that they're going after Princess Ashraf, that's the twin sister of the Shah, and of course wiping her out would again wipe out one of those links to narcotics in the Middle East, that Golden Crescent, that they're fighting for that turf over there. Members of the family have been killed. A nephew of the Shah was killed in Paris last year. But now the story around the marketplace is when the funeral takes place, there's going to be a big bang-bang in Egypt. The New York Post is carrying some wonderful stories about the team that tried to rescue the hostages in Iran. Listeners from New York have sent me these, and they're just invaluable. They're so large. I wish they were condensed so I could send them to all of you. They're written by Bernard Bard and B.T. Russell. And the gist of these articles, they're in several parts, are about Captain Beckwith. He's the man that headed the special forces that failed to get the hostages but was assigned to get the hostages. And the important thing was that Beckwith was trained, aside from the Pentagon, in a special unit called the SAS, the Special Air Force Service. And the way they were trained was by reading a book by Otto Skorzeny. He was one of the top Nazis with Adolf Hitler. He was temporarily in jail. He was released in 1948 when Israel became a country. He was well out of jail and on his way to Egypt to speak with Nasser and Sadat about setting up the Bormann Brotherhood to do in Israel someday. Beckwith kept a book with him by Skorzeny. That was his hero, to study the way the Nazi special commandos worked, and he had a special regiment of men. In the United States, working at age 32, this article explains, he started in 1961. Again, these time slots are so important. He began in 1961 training in an obsession over the SAS, and he worked with a man, Lieutenant David Cole, who presented the Skorzeny book with him, well underlined and noted, and they began training. First, Beckwith was at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. Then he moved to Fort Bragg, North Carolina. The Green Berets were there, and this is where his special forces were trained. Beckwith was first at the University of Georgia and then graduated and made a career of the Army and began his work in 1961. One of these articles tells about the things that they were trained to do, and that Fort Bragg had an organization for the Direct Action Unit for the Purpose of Assassination. And they were going to train first at Fort Leavenworth in the heartland of America, and then at Fort Bragg they were going to set up this assassination unit. Beckwith, according to this one article, felt that the training program was the core of SAS, selective course. It was a special course of special men that would fly in and do important jobs. Of course, Skorzeny was instrumental in rescuing Mussolini from the top of a hill. This was his claim to fame or his feat before Mussolini was finally captured and hung by his heels. The fact that Beckwith reads Skorzeny's book on how they captured Mussolini isn't important. It's what did the Italians do with Mussolini once they got their hands on him. Well, this article, is, as I said, is a series on Charlie Beckwith, a very important series, in the New York Post, just run this last June. Hopefully it'll be in a book, about the training of this U.S. Army officer and his assassination team and the work of the special forces at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. He was sent to England as part of his program of training and then back to Fort Bragg, South Carolina, to set up this unit. I don't know how many of you remember, because I take so many new listeners every new week, new people are listening, to a radio broadcast I did in 1974. That goes back 6 years. Many of you probably don't remember that. About James Frankenberry. I got a letter from a man. This was 2 years after the Watergate arrest, a year and a half after the Watergate arrest. They were in June of 1972. A man named James Frankenberry, who was trained at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, in a special forces group. He doesn't mention Beckwith, but he mentions other names. And I'm going to read the letter to you because I got it 6 years ago and because Beckwith's name is in the news now. with his special team that was groomed with underlined books of Hitler's men for their training and set up these assassination teams. This is the letter I got in 1974. Dear Mrs. Brussel, he'd gotten a hold of my article on why was Martha Mitchell kidnapped and the use of Nazis and counterintelligence to take over this country. It was the Watergate first published article I did. He said, I enlisted in the Army March 18th, 1962. That's just, John Kennedy was killed November 63. I want you to keep your time slot straight. I had basic training in Fort Ord, California. That's just around my back door here. Then went to Fort Benning, Georgia for jump school. Beckwith also was down in Georgia and then up in South Carolina. In September of 1962, I was assigned to Fort Bragg, North Carolina. That's just almost a year before Kennedy was killed. And Beckwith admittedly was setting up assassination teams in North Carolina. He said, I was interviewed during October 62 and in February 63 by two warrant officers. We met in a small Spanish cafe near a train station, and we agreed to special weapons training for an overseas assignment. They told me I was going to Germany, flown into Riga, Latvia, USSR, for an assassination case that I was supposed to do for the Pentagon. I had confidential clearance, and they said I could refuse the assignment, but if I refused it, keep quiet. The Riga operation that he was supposed to go into entailed going into the Soviet Union and infiltrating a CIA team that was supplying weapons in the Soviet Union for rebellion. The warrant officer said that no one would believe me if I ever said anything about this anyway. This was in 1962, and no one would. As I said, the Pentagon Papers broke things open in 71, but in 62, they told him no one would believe him if he said anything anyway, and if I did, I would be placed incommunicado and be given treatment. This goes back to Bovard's book, Operation Mind Control, and the government was well into treatment at that time. He wrote, within the last few years, an effort has been made to seriously neutralize my position, because he didn't go along with it. They attempted to say I was incompetent. Once in 1969, they tried to transfer me to Springfield Medical Center, where their assertions could be proved to be untrue. During February 63, I was told my assignment was going to be inside the United States by February of 1963. And the target was to be Major General Edwin Walker. Now, later in the month, somebody else was chosen for the job. The important point I have to interject from his letter is this. Major General Walker worked with the Nazis in Germany and with the people behind Ronald Reagan's campaign for president right now, the very, very far right. And General Walker sat in his window in April, a month later in 1963, and a shot went out and two men fled, and they took a bullet out of the bookcase that couldn't be positively identified to Oswald. But then Marina Oswald helped the Warren Commission and the FBI and CIA and said Lee Harvey Oswald tried to kill General Walker. And then the motive for the Kennedy assassination was, being as Oswald didn't like Walker, who was right and Kennedy was left, he didn't like anyone. So he was a frustrated man who couldn't get off as much sex as John Kennedy, and therefore he shot him. That was about the reasoning. It didn't fit the ballistics or anything. But the point is that Frankenberry mentioned that they were going to shoot at Walker, not kill him, but shoot, that there was a training group inside the United States, like the Reichstag, to set up the shooting of a far-right man so they could blame a left. He said, in 1969, I later learned that Oswald had tried to shoot Walker. He had never gotten a hold of a Warren report or the commission report, and my suspicions increased to what happened in 1963. June 63, 3 months after the shot at Walker, I was reassigned temporarily to Fort Meade, Maryland, and briefed by a man that I now recognize since Watergate was E. Howard Hunt. This identification grew with knowledge that Hunt was involved with other assassination conspiracies, especially one in 1954. That had to do in Guatemala, and also he was involved with the Iranian crisis that put in the shot. Well, at Fort Bragg, South Carolina, he said there were five trainees selected for the latest job. That was in June 1963. Now, I'll give you the name of the trainees that were in his letter, because someday you may find their name linked to Beckwith's name in these articles that are coming out about Beckwith or books. It may be possible that you may see the name of somebody he trained with, and if you did, then you know that this team was being used for the assassination of John Kennedy trained at Fort Bragg, South Carolina, as Mr. Frankenberry told me they were, and it would link to these special forces that were trained by Skorzeny and his books and Nazi literature. He said the people he worked with, one, they worked in teams, Robert Fleming, James Kelly, Peter Marchand, and Robert Lawrence, and myself. There were five people trained for the job of assassination at Fort Bragg, South Carolina, and there were three teams of five each. This was his team. We were given terrain training, stalling procedure, sniper weapon familiarization. Then we participated in what was known as Operation Theron, Theron. The training ground was Camp David, and we were to assassinate a foreign dignitary. The target was made of rubber and traveled on a railroad-like affair. We had two bullets, special composition to explode and mark it clearly on the target we hit. We were told we had to get a headshot. I have quite a long file of correspondence from Mr. Frankenberry. Some of it came out of a law group that forwarded his mail from the Atlanta Federal Prison, Atlanta, Georgia. I haven't heard from him for a long time. You can imagine being in Atlanta, Georgia, and taken to a prison, having this kind of information, what his chances were of surviving. This is the problem even in a free nation, where you can say that somebody disappears or isn't seen or is locked up in a prison. You have the right to print it so that we know, but the media also is not aware of a lot of these characters or primary witnesses to trials, and therefore when we see a name, it isn't linked to another case. And while Mr. Frankenberry could be in Atlanta federal prison and we don't know what happened to him after that, nobody has a chance to know that such a man as Frankenberry exists. And I did read a great deal of this. If you want more, you let me know, and I'll read you on the air some of the correspondence I've had or had with him, and look up the last date that I ever heard from him. It said a picture of himself and so forth. He had a lot to say about the White House plumbers as the Nixon tapes came out and the Watergate story unfolded. The letter I read to you about the assassination team and the plans to kill a head of state that he found out was going to be John Kennedy later, I think should be very interesting in light of the articles coming out about the background of Mr. Charles Beckwith, because having this special training in Georgia where Mr. Frankenberry was, then being given these books by one of the most notorious Nazi war criminals possible, also makes it important to know that the guiding light for the police department, the Justice Department, the special forces, the Pentagon, is the military Nazi regime of Adolf Hitler. That was par excellence the group to emulate and to use their techniques. And with the exception of the goose-stepping and the armbands, everything else falls into place. Is it any wonder that Mr. Otto Winnicker from Germany is the head, or was the head historian of the Pentagon, of writing Pentagon history, and sent the men from the Air Force and Army to write the Warren Report after John Kennedy was killed, and John J. McCloy from Chase Manhattan Bank, who is the High Commissioner of Germany and released the top Nazis in 1957, including dogs like Skorzeny and others. This team of Nazis, of American cleaned-up Nazis, the corporation Nazis, and the books of the Nazis inspiring Beckwith are interesting. And then to get a correspondence from a man who participated with these special assassination teams, and for him to spell out, see, he spells out how they were planning to shoot General Walker, but he doesn't grasp the comprehension of the counterintelligence. He knows someone else will be blamed with it, and later he read that Oswald was blamed for trying to shoot General Walker. But the implications go even farther, because Oswald is linked to Russia and the KGB and the Soviet Union, and they don't tell you he's linked to Argentine and the Nazis and Navy intelligence, or that the people who shot through Walker's window very conveniently missed him at close range on an April evening, but managed that wonderful feat of the headshot against John Kennedy. They don't tell you that these people were trained for a specific political purpose that can be used by the news media to turn our minds against other people and eventually set us up for World War III. Yeah, Beckwith, the article on Beckwith mentions how he returned to the United States from Europe, where he was in England at special training, in 1961. That was an important year in his life. His inspiration and his obsession was the SAS, that special service. Well, in 1960, again, Robert Mayhew from the FBI, along with Charlie Bates and Marilyn Baker and that gang, Charles Mayhew, the Irish FBI, take over the Howard Hughes organization. He worked for the CIA counterintelligence and then met with organized crime to set up the assassination teams that later were going to kill John Kennedy and a lot of other people. 1960, when Kennedy was to get the nomination to be president of the United States, was when the teams were set up to murder anybody who ran against Richard Nixon and pushed Nixon out of office. Nixon and Reagan were selected a long time ago. The assassination teams were set up in 1960, and then Beckwith could get busy in 1961 with his special forces in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and the special forces were trained with well-equipped assassination experts and the silencers and all the weapons and techniques and the planes and the technology for getting out of town, and also the techniques of having officers used who later the media could create patsies and cover up their murders. They had to work hand in glove, knowing that they were being trained for these murders and that the media was blaming somebody else. They had to work hand in glove with people like Adolph Ochs of the New York Times, who believed that his paper was an extension of the federal government. I was talking last week on several tapes about the Los Angeles Police Department, the death squads in Miami, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, and Brazil, again patterned by Reinhard Gehlen after Hitler's intelligence and Gestapo, and trained in Panama at the School for Police. Well, just this week, Congress is asking for a panel, the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, to crack down on police brutality. What I'm talking about, the LAPD in particular, I know, or certain other cities in particular, such as Dallas and the jail, you know, opening up the jail to Jack Ruby to kill Lee Harvey Oswald, this kind of behavior of the police departments, but mostly, again, not only witnesses to trials, but against the minorities, is no longer a California problem. I was trying to work on that at the time that I learned Donald DeFries worked for the police department and Louis Tackwood of the LAPD became a friend of mine. He wrote Glass House Tapes to expose the police. Tackwood at a press conference in 1971 saying that the White House, the CIA, the FBI had a Gestapo, a link with the police departments. That was in the Washington Post, the New York Times. He wrote a book, The Glass House Tapes. But now, that was 71, this is 9 years later, they're asking U.S. Commission on Civil Rights to do something about police abuse, and they have a report now on police practices and the preservation of civil rights that, indeed, the Chicanos, the blacks, the Indians, the minorities, and the witnesses to trials are being murdered, and the police department go away free and wipe out very important witnesses that could change the history of our country if they were allowed to talk. The brutality of the police on the minorities is outrageous, and it is so bad after the Miami shootouts that cost millions of dollars, $100 million in riots, and not to count the 18 persons that were killed, and the country's ready to erupt again, and now they say, okay, it isn't a city problem. It's not up to the city council in Los Angeles. It's a national problem, and the national police force must account why they have no minorities, why they go after the blacks, why they're killing the labor leaders, and so forth. It's become a national problem. And finally, 9 years later, it's proposed to the Congress that they take a hold and examine the police departments. They might just start in Dallas, where John Kennedy was murdered, and Memphis, Tennessee, where Martin Luther King was murdered, and Los Angeles, where Robert Kennedy was murdered. All police departments linked to organized crime figures and to the Central Intelligence Agency and the FBI, working with those hit teams that come out of Fort Bragg, South Carolina, and with the newspapers that cover up the real assassins and keep projecting that lone assassin BS stuff that we get over and over. Or they can do like the police in Indiana when Vernon Jordan was shot and almost killed, the head of the Urban League recently. They can say, it looks like a conspiracy that there was more than one person, ambush was set, but we won't go looking for it. In other words, there's no more telltale diaries or lone conspiracies. They say, yeah, it's a conspiracy, but we don't have a lead. Now they admit there's a conspiracy, but they don't have a suspect. There's no way to hold that clock back. It's the end of an hour again. We'll just have to continue next week with some of these important stories. But this is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, and you take care, and I'll be back with you next week with some more information on these lovely characters.
Let it be the dance we do. May I have this dance with you. Through the good times and the bad times too. Let it be a dance. Let a dancing song be heard. Play the music, say the words, and fill the sky with sailing birds. And let it be a dance. Let it be a dance. Let it be a dance. Learn to follow, learn to lead. Feel the rhythm, feel the need. Reap the harvest, plant the seed. And let it be a dance. The times and the bad times too.